Welcome to the Woadsman Podcast, a show discussing all things camping, bushcraft, and outdoor adventure.
So hello guys, and welcome to another episode of the Woadsman Podcast. It's Liam here, Primal Nomad, one of your hosts, and I'm actually not joined for this intro by Tom, Backgarden Bushcraft, my normal co-host, and unfortunately that's because, again, we're separated by distance and we have been so respectively busy. I can't stress enough just how incredibly busy this last month has been for both of us. I know Tom's been doing some incredible historical days with his school, teaching the children really, really important things that are going to last with them for their whole lives, so I can't wait for him to be able to share those with you next time. And I've been on a few trips in Scotland. I've been really busy with work starting to kick off as well. And yeah, both of us are really excited actually to get this episode out. And we did want to share some of your bush illusions for 2023 on the beginning of this episode. But unfortunately, that's going to have to wait until next time. But that does give you guys, all the listeners, the chance to submit your bush illusions for this year. And it'd be lovely to hear them. And we've had some really great ones already, which again, we'll share in the intro to the next episode. But anyway, I hope you enjoy this episode, and until next time guys, stay safe. The Woadsman Podcast is proud to bring you a unique opportunity from the State Detective, whose mission is to source and offer their followers some of the best beef products on the market. With a passion for steak and World War II military history, the State Detective combines a love for a period in history, that integrity, honesty and patriotism were all embodied. The State Detective embraces these great attitudes, and together we're giving a gentle nod to those who served by offering you, the listener, a promotional code for the State Detective. Use the code WOADSMAN20 to receive 10% off of your order, and also award 10% to help support the Bearded Fisherman, a UK-based charity helping those suffering with mental health issues. So whether you're in the market for beef jerky, biltong, incredible sauces, ration packs, tanks, warships or flyboys, and also love bushcraft, cooking, hunting or fishing, check out the State Detective. It's terribly British.
So hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Woadsman Podcast. I'm here by the fire with my good friend Liam, Primal Nomad.
Hey buddy.
My co-host for the Woadsman.
Indeed, it's good to be here with you. So cozy right now.
We've got a rip-roaring fire made with dead standing wood that we've sawn up with a Bacco Laplander. We're sitting nice and close to it so that we're nice and warm. And yeah, it's been a lovely evening together, hasn't it?
It's been really, really nice actually. We've had some burgers, some cooked burgers on the frying pan with Mexicana cheese. We're about to have a festive little treat, aren't we?
We are. So we decided to do a crumble, a woods crumble.
We're trying a one-pan crumble, aren't we?
We are. So
we've got a frying pan, my little Dubai frying pan. We've got a tin of Prince's apples.
We have, yep. The pie filling.
Yeah, the pie filling ones, the little cubes. And then we've got a crumble topping.
We've got a bag of crumble mix, and I'm looking forward to it, dude.
It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be nice, I reckon.
Your metal plate has a lid on top, and we're just going to bake it on the embers, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. So we use my metal plate and Liam's pan, and try and see if we can do a pan crumble. So.
And it's all stuff like that, that bushcraft is really what it is to us, isn't it? You know, those kind of like primitive skills, cooking outdoors, practicing things that have almost been forgotten, and it's only, you know, they've only been hung on to by a few people.
Now they're
starting to get more commonplace, which is amazing.
Absolutely. Like, whilst a caveman all those years ago will not have been munching a crumble around the fire,
no,
he would have been sitting around the fire with his mates. He'll be eating something, he'll be cooking something, you know. So,
and utilising methods of cooking in different ways, you know, cooking over bits of wood, charring over bits of wood, primitive steaks like how we've done it before, you know, just a caveman steak.
Chucking it on the fire.
As we call it, it's aptly named. So stuff like that is really awesome. I'm really looking forward to that crumble there. It's going to be such a good way of celebrating the evening. And you know that feeling of you know, that reward after a meal is something we can relate back to our ancestors with.
Yeah, you know, 100%. They would sit and they'd throw the empty sort of shells of whatever it was they were eating, or the nuts that they were munching. They'd chuck the bits they didn't want over their shoulders, and they'd end up with these mounds of food. And like midden to me, mounds. Midden mounds.
Yeah.
To me, that's an indication of the sort of good spirit that you get around a fire. And you can just imagine, while we're sitting here now, you can just imagine what it would have been like sitting around a fire any time in history. You can just, the feeling would remain the same, that warmth you get from the fire in front of you, the feeling of a meal in your stomach,
yeah,
and the good cheer of having a sort of close friend,
a comrade
to talk to and chat.
Yeah, that's it. And it's also, you know, back not too long ago, food meant a lot more to people.
Yeah.
So
you couldn't just run down to KFC and grab a bargain bucket. It was, you had to work for your food.
Yeah, and in some respect, everything went a lot more, even down to something that you're quite, you know, you're very skilled at, making cutlery and stuff like that. Mm. We take that for granted.
Yeah.
Food, cutlery, the things we cook in. The containers, the pots, the pans, the knives, everything.
That's it.
And they all boil down to really small, small little kind of skills and skill bases that could have been lost so easily but been held on to. And that's what I love about bushcraft.
Yeah, so do I. It's that connection you get with the past and that sort of feeling of timelessness when you're actually out. Like, you're separate. You're in your own little bubble away from everything.
Yeah.
And you could be anywhere. You could be at any time.
Absolutely.
And you're preserving skills that would otherwise be lost. And that's kind of what we wanted to do today. We wanted to capture that sort of spirit that's transferred through the ages and that's transcended sort of time, that sort of ability for people to sit around a fire and just have conversation flow.
Yeah, fireside chat and
yeah.
What it means in the respect of, you know, how bushcraft has allowed us to do it, you know, without bushcraft as a kind of subject, I guess we wouldn't have had that opportunity to meet at the bushcraft show and you know, do all these wonderful camps and trips.
Yeah.
So it's through that we've met, but it's a very primitive feeling in all of us that I'm sure if we met any of our listeners, we'd have the same connection.
Yeah, you instantly connect with people and you feel, I don't know, when you're looking at the fire and you're staring into the flames. It's a similar thing to when you smoke your pipe or you read or you sort of do something with your hands while you're talking to someone. It's like you immediately feel more prepared to listen to an alternative viewpoint, or
yes,
like you're going to have a more genuine conversation with someone around a fire. Like if two people disagree, if they're around a fire together, it's normally something that they can have an amicable discussion about.
Yeah, you rarely, I don't know if I've ever encountered an argument by a fireside.
No. I've encountered people disagreeing, but yeah. Amicably. And
that's it.
Understanding each other's viewpoints. And I think having that fire to focus on, a bit like pipe smokers talk about having the pipe to sort of focus on and keep lit while you're having a conversation, it moderates tempers and it keeps people friends, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really nice way of kind of putting that into words, actually. That's a really nice way. I like that. And it's true, because I guess when you're out here, you're both out here for the same reason.
Mm. Well, we rely on each other, don't we, when we're out here? Like,
exactly.
If I was to fall over and hurt myself, I'd need you to be able to help me.
Yeah.
And, like, if something happened to you, you would rely on me to go and
Well, we're a team,
it.
Aren't we? We're yeah. a cohesive team, and if one of us starts to flag or
yeah, is we're always looking out for each other, aren't we?
Yeah, even, you know, in a mental way, like if one of us gets demoralised, we're there to pick each other up, and you know, like when our shelter little incident
yeah.
when the ridgepole snapped on mine, and then we laughed about how mine came down and yours hadn't, and then yours yeah. came down.
I know.
Then we were both kind of like,
and we just saw
situation.
The funny side. Then it was
laughed away through building
we,
the next
We saw
ones.
The funny side, used a bit of good humour to get through it, and we learnt from the experience.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so special about this hobby. And it was like earlier, I was sawing some firewood, wasn't I?
Yep.
And you just came over to me and you'd brought me over one of your biscuits.
Yeah.
And you were just like, here you go, mate. You've been working hard. Keep mm-hmm. your sugar levels up. And it's like, that's the sort of thing that we do. We're a team.
Yes.
You look out for each other. And I think that's something that has definitely, to me, stood out in the bushcraft community. It's when people go out together, they're a unit.
Yeah, and that goes down to, I think, as well, you know, all the way back to that primitive feeling of, you know, people working together. Like, let's say if you and me were back a few 100,000 or 10,000 years ago, 15,000 years ago, and we were in the same situation right now, we'd probably know that there was predators out there. We'd be actually thinking, right, where's our next meal coming from?
Yeah.
Where, you know, where have we travelled from? Where are we travelling to? There would be a whole different purpose, and we'd still be looking out for each other in the exact same way. There's no difference in the experience that we're having right now.
Exactly.
In terms of looking after each other. Yes, we don't have maybe some of the dangers or the risks that they have, but we're still out experiencing the same things. There still can be.
But we have other modern problems that we have to encounter.
Absolutely.
Other people in these woods, like 100%. The fact that humans are the biggest risk really to us here.
Yes.
And we're not that far from civilization, because civilization has encroached so far on natural environments, so you're never very far away from other people. You never know who you're going to stumble across.
Yeah, over here in the UK it's very hard to get away from or very far away from civilization. You're always within earshot of a city or a town, unless you're out in national parks or kind of up in the north of England, really.
Mm. I mean, we're a good mile in, aren't we, here?
Yes.
And you can still hear a road.
Yeah, they're relentless, but it's...
easily a mile in.
But it's easily kind of, you know...
It's a that, thick woodland.
Yeah, and that drifts off, doesn't it? You know, even though you are conscious of that kind of background noise of the modern way going on around what we're doing in this little bubble, like you said, and I really like how you coined that. But it's easy to put, you know, that does go off into the distance. That's a background noise, and it really fades off.
It feels like it's somewhere separate from here.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if this makes sense, but I feel at the moment like we're in a bushcraft snow globe.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean.
Like,
you know
this, this where we are now, this woods, is, like, so different to what everyone else is doing.
Yeah, and this little scene where, you know, the fire's illuminating this forest scene is like, that's a really nice way, again.
And there's no paths here, are there?
No.
Anywhere near where we are.
We're
so
off the beaten track.
We sort of almost bushwhacked in here. I mean, we've been here before, so there is a bit, like, we know where to go, so we don't have to bushwhack through. But the first time we came here together, we did have to basically bushwhack, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
And so that's sort of really special. It's like a little hidden glade that we know about.
Yeah.
That other people don't.
Yeah, and it's like these little... That's it. It's like this little pilgrimage. And that would be back in our... You know, back if we were, again, our ancestral hunters.
Yeah.
This would be like one of our stopping glens when we're on our three-day hunts or something.
Absolutely.
Going to the feeding site that is a few miles away or something.
They 100% would have had spots that they knew about that they wouldn't tell everyone. They would only tell their trusted friends.
Yeah.
It's like, that hasn't changed. Like, that's the same. And if I refer to this spot, Liam will know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like, if I say Lavu Camp...
Yeah. I know
Liam knows exactly where I'm talking about.
Yeah, if I say crunchy fried chicken spot.
We're in it, mate.
Exactly.
So I just think that's really cool that actually, although we're in a completely different civilization, when we're out here, we're not.
Yes.
It feels connected. And it
really
feels connected to a very long history of primitive skills.
And I think that's that yearning in us, isn't it? The reason we're doing it is because I think we feel more connected to our ancestral past than we do our modern kind of counterpart. And going back again a few episodes back to our trivia, Jamie, Living Wild UK, actually put in a good question about the urbanisation.
Yeah, that was really interesting, that question.
Yeah, of the human race. And to think it's only been 99.9%, you know, 0.01% that we've lived outside of our natural environment.
0.01.
And you can see and understand wholly why some of us still do feel that complete urge and inner drive.
That need to be outside.
Yeah, need to be outside, because we're so far removed from it. And it's only in, you know, my grandfather's generation that they were still living off the land. And it's lovely that skills like that are becoming more prevalent through bushcraft as well.
Definitely. And it's like... I think I live in London. I work in London. Well, not in central London, but I live in a London suburb.
Absolutely, yeah.
And when I come out somewhere like this, I immediately feel at home. I set up my tarp, sat under there, and I just breathed. And I was like, this is me.
Yeah, you're back.
I'm back.
Yeah.
Did you miss me?
We did. We did. The woods have missed you.
The woods have missed me.
Your humble chuckle. It's brilliant.
So I just think that that's a really nice way, just the spirit of the past ages and stuff that we experience when we come out here, even if it's a feeling that we can't really explain, we do get a feeling that we're connected to a thing larger than us, like a history that exists.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what we wanted to just spend sort of half an hour sort of chatting about today.
Yeah.
Is just how bushcraft has helped keep that feeling alive.
Yes.
But also the skills associated with it. There are so many crafts and skills that would be completely lost.
Oh, we often take for granted some of the things that we do, and we just think, oh, we're just practicing a skill. But what we're doing is we're actually keeping alive a skill. You know, not only are we going out and doing something for ourselves, all by doing these incredible feats, you know, bow drilling, hand drilling, practicing knots, going out and living in the wild, living outside.
We have no reason nowadays.
Yeah, we don't need
to. Need to cook on a fire.
No.
We both have induction hobs at home. We have modern technology.
We have way electricity. Easier ways of doing it.
We could be at home warm with central heating right now. Well, actually not really, because of the price of central heating nowadays, but
but very true.
In theory, we could all be at home in a slipper, in our slippers, not in one slipper, in our slippers, nice and cozy inside. We don't need to be cooking on a fire. We don't need to be out in the cold. No. But it's that need inside us to get out and connect with these ancestral skills.
And I think it's, again, it almost, they did it out of necessity, and we're not doing it out of necessity, but we're almost doing it out of preparedness. So, you know, part of the reason why I enjoy bushcraft so much is knowing that if I ever do get myself into a situation where I do need to rely on those skills, I can do.
Yes.
And should anything happen to the modern way of living, or let's say the energy crisis got incredibly worse, and we couldn't afford to cook our foods in the normal conventional ways, we'd actually be a step ahead.
Yes, absolutely. Quite a few steps ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And it's having that ability to do that and say, and looking forward and kind of saying, well, actually, I'm not just relying on the system.
Absolutely. And it's that sort of feeling of independence you get as a result of that.
Yeah.
And because I think modern society does try and put you all in a box, and it's quite nice every now and then to just get away from that slightly. You know, so, without getting too tinfoil hat, it is quite nice to be a little bit free sometimes.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And that's where, like, going into what you were saying about the crafts, that freedom to express yourself in certain ways. Like, you absolutely love your carving, don't you?
Yes,
and
yeah, absolutely.
And actually get a skill that you can imagine the first time a human found a sharp instrument and a bit of wood.
Yeah,
you can guess what happened.
Yeah, because it's just natural within us to want to cut stuff.
To whittle, isn't it?
Yeah.
To whittle away and pick things. And you know, things like weaving, net making, all these incredible crafts that could easily, you know, machines, okay, you've got to have the knowledge of how to program a machine, how to do it. Mm. But the physical hands-on skills, like there's basket makers that I went to see in the Weald and Downland.
Yep. Fantastic skills.
Incredible. Just to see the amount of, and the array of plants that you can use for a natural fibre, and to think all of them have been used for millennia.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for people who are sort of primitive archaeologists and bushcrafters and outdoor enthusiasts actually using these skills and practicing them, that skill of weaving a basket by hand would be lost.
Yeah, well, there is a red list of endangered crafts.
Yeah, and spoon carving, if everyone just bought their spoons from Tesco's,
how many generations, you know, what did Joe Price say, how many generations would it take to lose it, you know,
to forget it? Yeah,
forget something. It's
skills are perishable, sadly, and if they don't get passed down,
they get lost. And it's like, we were doing Christmas crafts with the kids at school. We did cooking, we did wreath making using natural materials. And obviously I was telling them about the different plants we were using.
Brilliant.
But a couple of them asked if I could help them make a scarf for some of their other... We did gingerbreads and they wanted to put a scarf on the gingerbread. And so I found some wool. And instead of just teaching them, say, a plait, I actually taught them how to do two-ply cordage.
Oh, brilliant.
But using multicoloured pieces of wool.
So they could see the intertwining.
So it looked really pretty. So they loved
and
learning
they could,
it.
And because they could see it
was,
how it worked.
It, yeah, and they loved learning it because it was like a nice thing that they could then use as a bracelet or put on their gingerbread man as a scarf.
Brilliant.
But actually, now I have a couple of the kids who are teaching their friends how to do two-ply cordage.
So you're passing down the cordage skills at an early...
It's kind of cool because, like, they would probably never have seen that method.
Well,
they would have just done a plait.
Yeah, and the earlier you start someone on that lesson, or on that journey, sorry, I'm not on that lesson, so the sooner you start someone on that journey, the they have more opportunity to discover things in that wealth that is youth. You know, when you're young, you have a lot of free time to delve into things. So that's amazing. I think to give you know.
Well, they saw me doing it
because knots for some of them.
It started as they saw me doing it because one of them had asked me to help them make a thing for their gingerbread man.
Oh, so you thought this is the way to
do it. And so I just started doing it, and then of course I soon had a few kids gathered around me saying, "Oh wow, how did you do that?" I was like, "Bushcraft lesson."
Oh boy.
And so yeah, a couple of them now know how to do two ply cordage. They don't know it's two ply cordage.
No,
they just know it's a pretty pattern out of wool,
but they were interested to do it because of that primal draw to.
And then what I did the next day is I brought in one that I'd made out of hay.
Nice.
So a two ply string.
Yeah.
And I said, just so you know, what I taught you to do for making your bracelets was actually used traditionally to make string. I was like, so this is made of hay. And I got them all to sort of see how strong it was. And they were amazed by that primitive craft.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was really nice actually to see
I love that.
Kids interested in learning about it.
Yeah, well when I was young I did something similar but with one of my dad's teachers when he was an apprentice in his brickwork. He went on, used to work with a chap and he was kind of his master. And Mick Quill was his name, rest in peace. And I just remember helping my dad and him make a straw rope called a sugawn in Irish and doing it in all the traditional manner. And it was for some photographs from my granddad's books. And I was just helping them out. And when I look back at those photos, I think, well, you know, it was just amazing as a young child to be doing stuff like that. It really does get you going. I remember just being
so
excited.
Well, you've got a huge smile on your face.
I had the flat cap on, I had the woven jacket on. It was just so much fun. I remember it as a kid.
So you've shown me that photo, but just listeners, it's an audio only podcast, so you can't see what I'm saying. But when Liam was recounting that story, he had a huge smile on his face because he was remembering such a positive memory. And I just think that's so special that actually a skill like that can bring so much happiness.
Well, that's what I think you've given to those children as well, you know, that moment of like, oh wow, and then, you know, to them then to have that achievement of doing it. It's that feeling that bushcraft does give us, and I think that's that connection.
Yeah, having a few oh wow moments every week is a good thing, I think.
Yeah.
So I like that, actually. I'm going to coin that.
Yeah.
An oh wow moment.
An oh wow moment.
I think we all need that, don't we?
Yeah, so if any of you guys have had an oh wow moment recently, share it with us.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
That'd be good.
But yeah, just so many primitive crafts. And we're obviously, we don't want to... This is just sort of a chat around a fire. We don't want to go into these topics individually in detail because we would like to do a separate episode on cordage. We'd like to do a separate episode on net making, maybe with someone who's really skilled at net making.
Yeah. Likewise, pottery.
Pottery, I mean, your lovely Ellie.
Yep, indeed.
She's very skilled, isn't she?
Yeah, she's really cracking on with her pottery. She absolutely loves it.
And that's a primitive skill.
Yeah, it is indeed. And she she's just a natural at it. It's amazing to watch what she can do and do with clay. And I know when we were at the Bushcraft show, she met up with Paul Smith, Primitive yep. Pottery. Absolutely amazing chap. Followed him for years on Instagram and Facebook, and big on the Living to Learn community. So shout out Paul Smith. And Ellie and Paul both got on like a house on fire. It was very windy. We were all around his kind of tarp. He had such a great display of pots. And, you know, to see both different aspects, Ellie throws on the wheel and he throws a lot of hand-building stuff. Mm. But to see how that skill has progressed, so he's obviously displaying them very original kind of, not replicas, but very of the era, Neolithic kind of early Iron Age, Stone Age kind of pottery. And Ellie's doing the more refined, but they're both the same skill.
Yeah.
It's just great to see that development. And
yeah, and you can guarantee if you took someone from history and were able to bring them in a time machine to here right now, and you were to get Ellie to show them the pot making or me carve a spoon,
yeah,
they'd be amazed at the modern technology, but they would still see the skill that they are familiar with.
Absolutely, and I think if you gave them the modern tools, they wouldn't find it too hard to quickly adapt.
It's like if we were doing bow drill, if we were here doing bow drill and you brought over someone from the past who relied on bow drill,
yes,
you could give them one of our sets and they could get a fire.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it, like, that to me is special. That's very, really
very
cool.
Special. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's probably one of my favourite skills, that I think it is what the skill that actually got me into bushcraft was friction fire. Seeing Ray Mears pull out a friction fire and cooking cattail roots.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my god.
I've eaten those.
They're a funny taste.
They're interesting.
They are. Stringy.
Stringy. And they cover your face in charcoal.
But even doing that, I mean, I remember the first time I ate cattail roots. Like, despite, you know, like you say, the taste isn't amazing. They're not bad.
But you want more because it's like...
You're like, oh, this is so cool. I mean,
yeah. it's an oh wow moment.
Yeah, it is an oh wow moment. Exactly, Tom. That's perfect. And like you say, that's what just keeps bringing me back. It is just what keeps bringing me back to bushcraft. You said that, like, in one of our first podcasts. You know, feelings like that are what bring you back to bushcraft. I think that's what brings me back, this connection to the primitive past. And I've had that draw with hunting lately and butchering my own meat, preserving that. I know that's something you're desperate to.
I'm desperate to learn about it, for sure. And I'm hoping that one day soon we'll manage to get on a hunt together. And I'd love to learn from you and the guys you go out with. And it's another avenue that I've not yet pursued.
It's a very special kind of thing. And I think it's another skill that often gets overlooked because it's an important one in the community as well.
Yeah. It's like, same with processing game. Like, taking the game is one thing, but actually being able to process it is another skill that is so important and that has been passed down generation to generation.
Oh, dude, when I think of the first deer that I butchered now, I'm just like, whoop, a darn messed up. I'm just like, oh man, I could have got so many more cuts out of them.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't waste any, but I had like a leg with like the whole rear end on. You know, and now I've got a leg, I've got a shank, I've got a top side, I've got a rump, I've got I've got all the different components. Yeah. And then I'm like, right now I can do a roast, or I can do
It's
a leg.
Amazing. And you've processed it, you've taken the game and then you've processed it, and it's so much more special and meaningful to the animal than just picking a cellophane wrapped bit of meat off a shelf in a shop.
Yeah, and there's a time and a place for that.
Yeah, we did that today. It's like there's no problem with that.
I try to, you know, minimise how much I rely on the meat industry, but it's almost inevitable that you do as well. So it's nice to get that primitive connection.
Yeah, and that's a primitive connection I've not yet experienced and would like to.
I'd like to, even document your first, to be honest.
I think that's something we have to do at some point.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, I've got a little story on processing meat, because whilst I've not hunted myself, I have processed meat, and yes. I processed a lot of meat in, at once after being shown how to do it, because we had clients and I'd been shown how to butcher a rabbit, and then I had a whole load of rabbits to butcher for a big old stew.
Yeah, I bet you
So that's I remember I've been taught by many different people how to butcher game. A couple of notable standouts for me are Azala. She knows who she is, so she showed me many things to do with butchery, and Paul Kirtley obviously as well. So yeah, it's just really nice to know those skills and have people teach them to you. But I remember after butchering my first rabbit, I remember I got back from that course and then I went to work, and I was walking down the high street to the station, and I was seeing all these people glued to their phones, and I was just sort of thinking, yeah, something feels a little bit different about me now, because I know a skill that other people don't know.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was slightly different to all these people that don't even consider where their meat comes from, or don't consider where their meal comes from, or the fact that they always expect to be warm and would never even think about a layering system.
It does make you feel alive, doesn't it?
It does. Having the knowledge to look after yourself really does make you feel, I don't know, not special. It doesn't make you feel...
Well, it makes you feel connected with why you're here.
Yeah, yeah, it makes you feel slightly different, I think.
Yeah. I know, I do know what you mean, because I remember that feeling of like when I was out on a hunt and I was laid down in a field, like really soaked, really wet,
but alive, you know, properly
thinking,
alive.
Go stalking, they said. It'll be fun, they said. And but then, you know, you think, this is amazing.
Like, yeah,
I'm actually, you know, I'm working for my. This is.
A proper amazing. Yeah, that's what I'm talking
someone's
about.
Someone's
that feeling.
This, someone's been in, felt like this before, and they had no choice. I can't back out now. You know, I can't not.
And I know I'll get that same feeling again when I get back from this camp.
Yeah.
Because daily life will resume. I'll be walking down a London street. I'll be popping into Lidl to get my groceries, and I'll be thinking, a couple of days ago, I was in the woods relying on myself and Liam. And cooking
alone.
Food on a fire, and it just it, the fact that you've taken yourself out of your normal environment and plonked yourself into a woods and done bushcraft, it just gives you that sort of connection, and then you feel alive and vibrant for a few days when you get back.
Yeah, it really
kind of
re-energized.
Kind of separate from everybody else who's just going about their city life.
And I think
I can't really explain it, but
no, I think you've hit the nail on the head, because that's why I think this subject as a whole is great, because there's so many intertwining topics. Like, we've only touched on a very few of the crafts, and like we said, only very briefly touched on those crafts.
Fishing.
As well. Yeah, fishing, again, that's a craft that I need to explore more. And
tracking.
So many, and the opportunities are endless, aren't they? That's the thing, and it's just like, you can't quench your thirst quick enough. And even Ray Mears said it, and it's something that I think I'll have to take with me to my grave, and it's... that there's some things in life that you just don't have enough time to learn.
Yeah.
You it's can't, like, you just, you will, there'll always be questions unanswered.
It's like I'm looking up and I'm seeing stars.
Yeah.
I can't tell you what the stars are, because that's not a skill I've yet learned.
Yeah.
I'd like to know it.
I can tell you, I could tell you a few, but I'm very limited on my astrology. And it's something, again, being, you know, it's a great space to be open in, bushcraft, because the more open you are, the more people that will reach out to you with excellent advice.
Absolutely. And it's like, I know that in the past someone will have looked up at the sky and been able to tell you what every single one of those shining lights were.
We just need to meet them.
But I can't tell you what they are.
No. But, you know, it's, and it's like, if I'd have, you know, being all bravado with you and being like, yeah, I'm amazing at like feather sticks, and then how can I ever ask you for help on feather sticks? You know, and I've asked you for help with like feather sticks before, where I've been, you know, different grinds and stuff like that. You passed me a Wonder Tactical and I was like, tough.
I can't do it, mate.
Yeah, exactly. So like, having humility in bushcraft is another thing.
Oh, it's a huge thing.
I know we've spoken about that before, but it is
very important.
Allows you to learn these skills.
Because
well.
It's impossible to know everything.
Yeah.
And Like, you can spend every day of your life just trying to learn one skill, and you will still meet someone who knows something you don't know about that skill.
Yeah, you'll be surprised.
You can learn things from the strangest places. Like, there's always a bit of information waiting for you around the corner.
Absolutely.
If you're prepared to listen to it.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really nice way to wrap it up, is to kind of, for you guys to go away and just have a think about skills that you've learnt and how you can pass that on to the next generation, and how that's actually impacted your life.
And just think about anything you do outdoors. Just think, how has this been preserved by hobbyists?
Yeah.
Whether that's flint knapping, whether that's navigation, whether that's tree and plant identification, whether it's medicine.
Yeah.
Like, whatever it is, there's so many of those skills
and how
that have been passed down to us.
And how even your main job, how that's been affected by it. Because, you know, if you're an artist and you use charcoal, how that's affected, you know?
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to get your charcoal without charcoal burners.
Exactly. How was that invented in the first place?
And the knowledge of a woodsman to know what wood to use and when, how to burn it. And there's things like that that just keep me as interested. And
one question leads to two more.
Yeah, and that goes back to my bush illusion from the last episode, which is to kind of look at further into things. And that's why I really appreciate this conversation tonight.
No, it's just been nice, hasn't it?
Great,
I mean, we've got a couple of beers, we're sat around the fire, we're getting a little bit deep, and it's just nice. It's like we both appreciate bushcraft for what it's given us, and it has given us a real passion for being outside and a real sort of desire to learn. And I think that is, at the end of the day, so rewarding to actually have found a desire to learn.
Yeah.
And to be connected to the past in some shape or form, and be ready for the future. It does both. It connects you to the past and it prepares you for the future.
Yeah, and it's wonderful to be connected with you guys and to be able to share this conversation with you as well, and this journey. And it'd be wonderful to hear from you guys, if, you know, your bush illusions, and also
your wow moment.
Your wow moments. So yeah, keep them coming in, and we really appreciate the ones we have had so far.
Yeah, I hope you've enjoyed this little sort of conversation. Our idea for this episode was literally just to record a conversation we wanted to have.
Yeah.
Which was the original intent of this podcast anyway. So I hope you've enjoyed this sort of very informal, slightly looser
episode. It's been really nice.
This one was for us, wasn't it, Liam?
It was.
We just wanted to chat about this.
Yeah.
So I do hope you've enjoyed it. Please join us again in future episodes.
And drop us a message whenever. Definitely go check out the State Detective and use the code WOADSMAN20. And also, please do check out Joe Price's field guides, which are available, especially his one on feather sticks.
Absolutely, they're on his website, which we will drop.
Bogmark.
Yeah, I'm not going to try pronounce it, but he's also put links on Living to Learn.
Perfect. Thanks so much, guys.
Cheers.